が打算しろ、セガサタンしろ。
Hello everybody and welcome to episode 417 of the Siren Studs podcast. I'm Kurt, joined once again this week by my ungentlemanly co-hosts Peter and Jake.
That's right, Kurt. It is the blue food coloring edition of the cast. Blue coming in.
Great Socrates, what knowledge do you bestow upon us today?
Not that coming out. I had an ocean water recently from Sonic, and everything else was sea green.
Let me put it that way. Is blue the unsung hero? Like Red 40, everybody says is like causing.
What is it with Red 40? Is that like a horoscope thing? Like, did the astrology say that Red 40 is like going to cure my cancer?
Here's the thing about Red 40. I remember red dye number 40 being like a health concern talking point back in the 90s and early 2000s. Why is everyone acting like this is a new thing is my question.
I think people are realizing that like Aldi's doesn't sell any Aldi's products, specifically Aldi's products. Their name brand, the specific brand stuff will have Red 40 in it, but their Aldi's branded stuff will not have Red 40 in it, because I guess since they're German, I think EU standards don't allow them to put it in there or something like that.
Sounds plausible.
What about Red 5, standing by?
Red leader standing by.
What about blue Eiffel Blue 65?
Gold leader standing by.
They'll turn everything blue.
Double D, double die.
What is the last die that dropped from the die company? Like
the singular
Fanta
die
Pink?
Company.
Fanta Pink. Like, well, I want to know the last like food die that dropped that everybody was like, guys, honey, wake up! It's 3 a.m. The new food die.
I think it is Vanta Black, but I saw a dude in a high vis vest that was like Vanta White. It was insane how much light that reflected.
Can you imagine
back.
Like popping a Gushers or something like that and it being like Vanta Black?
I know there's some stupid ass TikToker out there who makes like squid ink gummies.
Put Vanta Black on a donut and we're gonna eat it.
Squid ink gushers.
Now this says not safe for human consumption, but the carbon nanotubes in my gut tell me yes, eat it. You'll turn into an android. Make sure to like and subscribe. Oh. See if I live.
Well,
turns
I didn't
out
find
you
a,
were an android the entire time. You're just waiting for
ago.
Your trigger phrase. Or your untimely death, whichever came first.
What the fuck?
That's a reference y'all get if you've been watching X-Men 97.
That was how Paladin Dance became a synth in Fallout 4.
Yeah, I missed half that conversation because I was entirely consumed by the Gushers squid commercial.
Is that Michael from Vsauce making a black Gusher and having a girl? Dude, what's wrong with Gushers?
Gushers, what's wrong with you?
Gushers, who hurt you?
Gushers, sold yourself out.
Gushers marketing team, you want to talk about it? Everything okay over there? What's going on? Of course, as always, we're coming at you from the Library of London. Pick a famous one. I don't care. But we're gonna search through some famous, you know, European war stories, and we're gonna talk about one of them today, a little bit later.
I mean, judging from World War II movies, like one out of every seven objects in a London library is like a canister, like a case for a brandy snifter.
Okay, I'm gonna
say
something.
You can just open up any object in a library, and there's like a nice decanter set with a lovely 20 age malt scotch. Those words I don't think make sense together.
As the movie started last night, I'm gonna say something out of pocket.
Yeah.
I thought of this. I was like, man, thank God for the Nazis, right? Because like
I'm absolutely snapped. I'm putting that. on the timeline. That's going right out of context.
Because, like, no... man, if we didn't, we wouldn't have, like, a ton of dope-ass movies. We would have some incredibly boring content for, like, decades. How long have Nazi movies been coming out for that we're, like, we're milking this pig like it's... a golden goose.
I think it has more to do with the fact that World War II is like the most consequential event in human history.
Yeah, yeah, but like, awesome. Good job, Nazis. Like, you made waves.
Is that why people think Jewish people control Hollywood? Because there's so many movies that make Nazis look bad. They're like, oh, I can't be actually that bad.
It's all a conspiracy
by the people I hate.
All right, don't even get me started before we get fucking uber canceled over the current events, because like there's something I got brewing in the back of my mouth that's I've become so progressive that I'm almost becoming a fascist.
We can do better than the Kanye QuickTime event. Did you see that video?
I've come full circle. Okay.
Yeah, well, you and a lot of people are there now, and it's fucking
I'm not
great if you're someone who's not radicalized to either side like myself.
I'm not completely there. I caught myself. I'm like, oh, bad thought.
You need to stop listening to the grifters.
Bad thought. I see it. Okay. Don't go full fascist, but like recognize there's some issues. I don't know what caused it, and I gotta be vague enough to not show my hand, but...
That's not suspicious behavior at all.
No, this is a perfectly normal way to behave.
Stop it! BB, stop. You're from Pennsylvania.
Why don't everyone just stop? Release all the hostages on both sides and just coexist,
fucking
for Christ's sake.
Turn around! Don't look at each other anymore. Everybody go back in timeout.
I want this war over by the time Mufasa comes out. Her first trailer on Trey Watch.
Yeah. I think that's what we should expect from the next presidential hearing.
Yeah. It's like the South Park episode where all three Abrahamic religions just convert to Van Halen.
If we get GTA 6 before the end of the Israel-Palestine conflict, I'm going to be so shocked.
That's the current pool in Vegas right now.
Yeah. GTA 6 or end of conflict.
Yeah. Which comes first? I got 200-1 odds on GTA 6.
Because I'm still baffled that we're getting Mufasa before GTA 6.
Yeah. I'm glad that Disney is still keeping their tradition of making shitty add-ons to their classic movies.
Well, this is a
this is like another degree removed, because
it's a shitty add-on to a remake,
the live movie adaptation of the live action. It's not
of the
live
terrible
action at all.
Live. No, it's not. It's an animated movie. Just because it's trying to be photorealistic does not make it live action. But dude, have you considered Pride Rock?
Oh, that's what it was. There's one and a half. When are they going to do a... They should have done a live action Lion King 1.5. First of its kind.
Yeah.
First of its name. Ruler of the Realm.
The pre-sequel. Or whatever it was. Whatever they called it.
It was the Lion King from the perspective of Timon and Pumbaa. That was what Lion King 1.5 was.
Yeah, it's pretty dope.
Yeah,
it was. I mean,
Seth Rogen's going to be in for this one.
I think they got most of the adults back. I think the kids might be different.
Yeah, I don't know. Mufasa's apparently a not that kind of mountain lion, but a lion from the mountains.
Yeah. Wait, so is
he's
this...
from the water tribe. He's the lion tar.
I know a bit of this is a prequel, but is there actually going to be like Simba in this? And this is going to be like, maybe this is going to be Lion King 0.5?
This is a prequel. This is the story of Mufasa and his rise to prominence.
Rise to power.
which is funny. It's absolutely hilarious to me because they're talking like, oh, once upon a time, a lion was born without a drop of nobility. And like, so we know that he becomes king. I'm like, hell of a dynasty you got there, Mufasa. You really...
Yeah.
You really created a huge royal family that Mufasa definitely made it.
Mufasa attended a Brown University and got his law degree and slowly rose to prominence by pro bono work.
So, like, I don't hate the idea of this story. And if, like, Disney Animation proper wanted to make a Mufasa movie in the style of the 1994 Lion King, I could be about it. I mean, I would be somewhat interested in that. But to do it in the style of the much, well, it made a lot of money, the much critically
maligned
yeah. 2019 Lion King live action remake.
I mean, my guess is
John
that
Favreau,
this...
he's got his hooks in it.
My guess is this was in production before X-Men 97 was as big of a hit. So, I mean, obviously. But I would say if X-Men 97 came out before this production, they probably would have tried to do like a retro thing. I think we're going to see another thing like that. maybe not Marvel.
Just give me
style,
Spider-Man 98.
Yeah. And we also, with this, we do get the... another dose of year-old syndrome. Y'all remember Beyonce's kid, Blue Ivy?
Yeah.
She is now old enough to be an actress and is in this movie.
Is that Billy Eichner? Is the name change?
Don't dead name her.
Shit. Oh, there we go. I had to press play one more time and go to the suck. I'm like, I don't see Blue Ivy Carter.
Oh my god. That's so good.
And then it said,
you had him coming today, Jake.
Beyonce she rolls up in her limo, like, or you know, her luxury SUV, like, all right, I'm gonna pick up my kid from school, and it's a little Billy Eichner just walks the fuck out.
You can see,
he's
I
got
can
the
see...
fucking propeller hat and the giant lollipop and the midriff exposing shirt with the bright green shorts.
Can you imagine a Billy on the streets? Do you know my mom?
I can 100% imagine that. I feel that this has happened. I feel we're remembering and not creating right now. Because it all feels too real.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I've seen before. I'm not making this up. I can't.
Do you know my mom? Yes, I can totally see him.
Well, she's standing right here. Beyonce. I can see that.
Do your thing, queen.
Speaking of doing the things and being queens, we have a teaser trailer for Lee. The romantic fiction retelling of the Lee Harvey Oswald story that has been gender bended to fit woke ideology and culture.
They yassified the Kennedy assassination.
What if we took the Kennedy assassination and yassified it? Fuck me.
Presidential assassins is a space exclusively represented by males.
Putting a whole new meaning to slay.
We seek to break down these barriers. With our movie about Leandra Harvey Oswald.
Oh my lord.
The story the government doesn't want you to know.
I guess the movie itself doesn't look bad. Like it's maybe gonna be a little cliche.
It doesn't look particularly bold, and it's got some, I feel, misplaced rah-rah girl power stuff in there.
Like, I like the concept of, like, that's a great perspective is, you know, the wartime journalists who were there.
We've, yeah, But I feel like we've had a glut of those movies recently.
Yeah, we got Civil War. This is just Civil War and World War II.
Yeah, but even like beyond Civil War, I feel like we've had a few movies in recent years that are told from the perspective of war correspondents. And I know further back that wasn't uncommon either. But Andy Samberg, stepping out of his comfort zone here.
Yeah.
I mean, behind the scenes, he is known to be a very serious and like workmanlike professional. So it does not surprise me that he would be like, oh, I want to do a serious role.
What's funny is I can see like SNL like having him back as a guest star and doing a skit about this. And then
this almost looks like SNL. Like some of these shots look a little like a highly produced SNL sketch.
I got a camera in a box. It's about taking nudes.
This is actually the Brooklyn Nine-Nine prequel.
It's about taking dick pics. Get the right lighting. No, not yet. I have to wait till the right moment.
Right angle.
Golden hour. Yes.
Stand in a room that's just, you know, like 70% humidity. Let everything relax and elongate.
That was Lee. It was only a teaser trailer. We didn't see much. A couple shots, some World War II
but,
set
I mean,
pieces.
I love that all the top comments are talking about Andy Samberg. No one is talking about Kate Winslet.
Well, that's because this looks 100% like a movie Kate Winslet would be doing in this stage of her career. Like, no one's surprised by that. Seeing Andy Samberg in a movie like this, that's a little more shocking.
Yeah.
Oh, it's kind of funny. I didn't see Civil War yet, so apparently this person, because it's based on a true story about this photojournalist. This photojournalist was referenced in Civil War. So.
Yeah, I would not doubt it.
It's a
Hollywood twins.
It's a good time to be Lee. Or what's her
Harvey
what's
Oswald?
Her name?
Yeah.
Lee.
Oswald. Yes, that is why it's called Lee.
Lee Miller, if everybody wants to get spoiled on it.
Oh, Lee, the Tommy Jones story.
The real killer of JFK. Look out, RFK.
The Leal killer.
No, yeah, the movie's just, it looks like it's titled Lee, but there's like Tommy and Jones on either side of it.
It just comes
into
focus right at the end.
Yeah.
RFK, don't go to see this in an old-timey theater. On a balcony.
I'd watch a biopic of Tommy Lee Jones, but only if it was starring Tommy Lee Jones. And I want him to play himself at every age.
No, I want in the movie. I would want a biopic of Tommy Lee Jones, but they have to live film every time they try and get him in for an interview, and he's just grumpily like, "What are you doing? Get off my property." Cause he's also reportedly just as much of a curmudgeon in real life as he is as he portrays in the movies. Mostly because he's just a personal man who just wants his space. So he's like, he very much gives off the get off my lawn energy.
Tommy Lee Jones.
That being said, if I could, I would sit on the porch with him and have a six pack in silence.
I want to see a Tommy Lee Jones biopic, but every time he opens a door, they cut to a different actor. It's a different actor every time he like opens a door to a new room.
Is this in any way related to Tommy Lee Jones, or is this just a generic concept?
Some of your avant-garde cinema that you're always watching all the time.
Tommy Lee Jones, every time he bumps into something, he gets a little bit wider. He starts off as like a really skinny Tommy Lee Jones, but like,
his aspect ratio changes.
Yeah, and then they stretch him. A little bit.
How
little
much wide. Is he going to bump into?
That's the hook.
He's so skinny in the beginning. How could he bump into anything, you're asking, right?
Well, I am now.
But then he's confronted with a beaded curtain door. Oh, my God.
All right, Jake, we're going to fund your script. $300 million.
Hell yeah, dude.
To get Tommy Lee Jones, I'm thinking Donald Glover.
To get Tommy Lee Jones to be a part of our stupid movie idea, we're going to have to give him at least 100 of that $300 million.
You got to know what really drives him, though. Got to give him some, what's that? I think
$100 million would drive
diesel.
Him pretty
like,
quickly.
I think he has like a little like nozzle that you put diesel into at the beginning of the day.
I was hoping it would be flavor blasted goldfish. That'd be much cheaper, but
I don't think so. I think like the 1 gallon box of goldfish is like $5-something, and the gallon of diesel's like $4-something.
That's got to be an IMDb trivia thing on one of his movies, right? Like what does he prefer, Tommy? I need to know.
Tommy, do you like the diesel or goldfish?
What drives you?
What do you want at Craft Services? Flavor blasted goldfish or diesel?
Which would you rather run into the woods? Which would you rather run into in the woods?
Oh
a can
God,
of
don't
diesel
get me started on that. Or
a box of goldfish?
I want to hear about bears or woods for like a good few weeks.
Yeah.
You're stranded
needs to go
on
into
island.
Hibernation. Oh my God! All right, so we're just done with trailer. That's it.
Yeah, that's two. We've been done. I've been trying to transition in vain.
I was gonna say, technically, there is the Boys season 4 trailer that came out.
Oh, let me guess. Hold on. Let me guess what happens. They try to kill Homelander, but don't succeed.
Well, they don't exactly show that in the trailer. They show a lot of. I mean, I'd have to look at other trailers, but it seemed a lot gorier or a lot more gratuitous. Couple things to point out. Animals are now getting the V compound.
I don't like that.
There's a roided out chicken that bursts through somebody's chest and a flying sheep. They're taking the plot from, what is it called? Class V or something like that.
Oh yeah, that's Generation
V.
Yeah,
is the one with the college kids, the spinoff that they did. That was actually really well received. So they're taking the plot of that, which was the school was a spoiler alert for Generation V. The school was like a testing ground for a virus that would only target soups. And they actually found a virus that would, like, just target and kill a soup. Soup.
They just made fucking Fox die?
Yeah, so they made a bioweapon for soups there. And the teaser at the end was, you see, what's his name, show up. And
Giancarlo Esposito.
No, what's the main character in...
Billy
Boys.
Butcher.
Billy Butcher shows up and he's like, ooh, something British virus. So they're
right,
taking that.
They're into Chisomite, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, they're taking that and they're putting it into that. Meanwhile, you have Vought is like becoming full fascist.
Becoming?
like they're like mask off and they're just like, I think, killing the government officials. And then they all know, and they're like, hey, Billy Butcher, we kind of need you now. We need you and your team to kill the soups because we're inept or something. I don't know. So we'll see how it plays out. It seems like it's more of the same, but...
Well, they actually, like, kill soups and don't do all this, like, bullshit melodrama
yeah,
that I don't
I remember
care
when
about.
They killed a soup in season 1, and then...
Yeah.
Or one of the 7, and then...
Well, the last season they killed a handful of them. It wasn't one of the 7. It was some of the retired ones, but yeah.
Yeah. They introduced for one episode.
Like, killing one of the important ones, they haven't done that in a while. Like, Maeve even survived, I think, too.
Yeah. I just... Whatever.
So
I hope I don't have to endure too many more of these.
I this sounds like it might be the last season, but... money, I don't know. They also Generation V. They wanted to have a second season, but one of the main characters died, like main actors, like just tragically died.
Oh,
Yeah. So
yes. I think I actually remember that story. Yeah.
I don't remember his name because he wasn't in much, but yeah, it was pretty sudden. All right, that's it. That's all the trailers.
Perfect. Perfect. All right, we are on now on to future other not upcoming. We're talking about the past now. We're following up.
Yes.
With our segment, the follow up.
Call it Days of Past.
Call it Days of Weeks.
Days of Weeks to come. Yes, Weekend 17, covering April 26th through 28th of 2024. Releasing in first place this week is Challengers, bringing in $15 million in across 3,400 theaters from United Artists.
Not a strong topper here.
No, kind of a weaker box office. But, I mean, I feel like $15 million is a pretty good opening for something like Challengers.
I'd say so.
And it's reviewing quite well, despite the trailer kind of giving you a weird impression of the movie. It's currently sitting at, hold on a second, 89% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, 7.8 out of 10 on IMDb, with a Metacritic score of, drumroll please, 83, but a 6.5.
Okay.
It's Metacritic must see. Actually, I think in all the movies we've spotlighted, this is the first Metacritic must see that we've encountered.
Okay, that's interesting.
Well, we usually review the better movies on the show itself.
Yeah, that's fair. But here, we're leaving it up to the real reviewers.
Yes, they'll give us the scoop as per usual. You know the drill. IMDb user reviewers are the realest of the real, and you can't stop that truth. It's the truth of the universe. To deny it would be one of the classic blunders, like getting into a land war in Russia and going to battle with a Sicilian when death is in the line. Messing with an IMDb user reviewer right up there. Like a green fox would say about Challengers, giving it a 9 out of 10. A riot from start to finish. Challenges feels like an extremely modern film. It's very playful and, dare I say, sporty in the execution of humor. Everything feels like a little game in this movie. We're not supposed to think the fact that these guys are competing for the same girl is scandalous or the actual conflict of the movie. The conflict of the movie is very much centered on the way they both approach the game of tennis and how Zendaya's character is pretty much the one in control. The boys let her do thing as she uses intelligence and sexuality to motivate them both. Let her do thing. The soundtrack adds to the lightheartedness of the film. There's no actual big traumatizing moment. It's nice to have such a light, breezy film about tennis that has a great sense of humor and a ton of depth when it comes to themes like financial security and what happens inside country clubs and where do you go when your Uber driver abandons you? LMAO. 34 out of 47 found that helpful.
All right, this review deserved, like its title, more respect, because not many people found it helpful. But I like it, so I'm going to read this one first. Bottom of the list. Film, no, taker. 1 out of 10. Tennis deserves more respect. In a bulleted list. I watched this with my tennis buddies, and I don't think the movie respects tennis enough. What the movie did well. Differential sponsorships. The top player wears Uniqlo and ON, while others wear Nike/Adidas. Actors play decent tennis, or at least look like. Potential improvement. The goal isn't right. The goal is the US Open and the career Grand Slam, not the Challenger. The Challenger is only a warm-up match. I can't believe the movie ended without the US Open. Sportsmanship. A player's wife offers sex to another player in exchange for a match fixing, ATP, and all ATP players and their partners should condemn this movie. Tennis rules. In the last point, the player touches the net. Motion sickness. Audiences do not watch tennis from such angles. 1 out of 2 found this helpful. I thought it was pretty helpful.
Yes, this artistic movie is not realistic enough. I just wanted footage of the game.
I have to go see a man about a baby.
They just want to watch tennis. This is not that. I want to give a quick shout out to Jesse M. Loving's their title, their 6 out of 10 entitled, Not What I Thought, based on the year's worth of watching the trailer. I'm like, good for you. Very dedicated. Really trying out here. Instead, though,
just a comment of how long the trailers went out before the movie.
Yeah. Instead, I'll have HCHMMYZV, their review of Challengers, 5 out of 10. Camp, 2 hour long plus advert. Spoiler warning, I guess. I don't know what I was expecting. Yeah, tennis. But with 3 good actors and the director of Call Me By Your Name, I guess I was not expecting this. Nothing much happens. It's supposed to be a love triangle story, but it really is a homoerotic friendship between the 2 male characters that supplies the most chemistry and drama. Josh O'Connor and Mike Faist are good with the material they have and are almost tongue-in-cheek acting at some points. The sauna scene is particularly funny. Is it supposed to be funny? I have no idea what genre I was watching. It was a pastiche of the men's locker room scene with Ryan Gosling and Steve Carell in Crazy Stupid Love. The film felt like an overlong advert with product placement throughout. Not as bad as Bridget Jones 2. And the seemingly retro clothing supplied by J.W. Anderson married the kitsch music. There were no surprises in the plot, and I knew what was going to happen 10 minutes before they got round to it. My friend who watched it with me also sighed at every signpost in the film. Despite all this, probably because of the great actors, this camp, funny, strange, overlong advert stays in my head. Maybe I'm just trying to work out what I just watched, or wondering why I didn't wait for it to stream. 10 out of 11.
Wow. Okay. JSNYDA, John Smith, New York District Attorney.
I think so, yeah. You nailed it.
Had this to say about Challengers, 10 out of 10. Back and forth, in a trance, ellipses, 10 out of 10. This movie absolutely floored me. The direction, the spirit, the music, the acting. I put quotation marks there because it felt like real life. The acting was perfect. The way camera moves were constantly fresh.
The way the camera moves was constantly fresh.
One stop motion esque scene in particular, M-, but please just go experience it for yourself. It's better than anything this year and will be bound to become an all time classic. I love it when it's their first movie they've ever seen.
Yeah. This is the first movie I've seen and it's the best.
There's nothing even remotely similar to this movie. The all-time most impressive thing about this movie is how at the start of the movie, there is little attachment to the characters. And then it reveals more and more layers until literally you're on the edge of your seat all the way up to the finish line. Not another movie like that.
This might really be their first movie. They've figured out what a character arc is.
Layers and layers until, yes, a true climax. I don't write reviews, but this movie just grabbed me and excited me about film again. I'm home, sitting on my bed, and my heart is still pounding. This makes me want to go create something. This is odd. 10 out of 10. 61 out of 125 found that helpful.
Jeebus.
Yeah. Had an account for 3 years and 5 months and has reviewed a few films.
All right. This is a bit of a longer one, but I think they rip into it, so it should be good.
Yeah.
One out of ten. Challenged by poor script and characters by Southern Views. Challengers will be a very divisive movie. Just scan the user reviews. I think if you are a fan of either Zendaya or director Guadagnino, you'll find no fault in this movie. Those reviews are all 8 to 10 ones you see here. God, why is that word so weirdly? Personally, I found the movie incredibly slow-paced, driven by poorly constructed story with characters I cared nothing about. The first 15 minutes dragged, but when they did the flashback to when Tashi, Art, and Patrick first met, I thought there might be some potential. There was an attempt at character building, but then the movie continued to jump back and forth in time to explain how we ended up where the movie began with no effort to delve deep into the characters. The script felt like a first draft. There's potential for an excellent story about how Tashi used and played Art and Patrick against one another to advance her life and career. But there are no key events to truly drive the plot. We just jump around in time to show their failed relationships. I also found the acting dreadful, especially Zendaya. None of the leads can emote anything, possibly due to the poor script or directing. Most lines are delivered flat and monotone. The movie also lacks humor and joy, other than the first flashback scene. Many scenes are also drawn out way too long, with throbbing techno music and slow motion. I constantly found myself looking at my watch and hoping there was a remote control so I could skip ahead 10 seconds. They could have easily removed 20 minutes from the final edit with no impact to the story. The last 10 minutes were truly awful. The whole homoeroticism aspect also falls flat. Art and Patrick can shove churros in each other's mouth as much as they want, but there is nothing else about the relationship to think either is completely heterosexual. It's like the director had to throw this in to be edgy. Ditto with the locker room and sauna scene. I also found the tennis action disappointing. I give the director credit to attempting something different by showing the action as if the player had a GoPro on their head or if the ball were the camera, but none of it works. There is no excitement or tension in any of the points played. And all the full-frame shots of the actors swinging a racket obviously use a CGI ball. And don't get me started on the ending. Everyone in the theater burst out laughing, and they were laughing at the
end. I was told there was no humor.
Yeah, right. Nobody was, and they were laughing at the ending, not with the ending. I didn't hear a single compliment from people leaving the theater. So in summary, if you love Zendaya or Guadagnino, you may enjoy this movie. Otherwise, wait for it to hit streaming and have that remote ready. 76 out of 101 found that helpful.
Oof. Badoof. Finally, from Zitipibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibib was a challenge to sit through for 131 minutes. First of all, this movie has an 80s style vibe that we've seen many times before that could have well been told in a conventional 90 to 100 minute movie. This movie was truly not important enough to tell it over 131 minutes. Add to that, there were pointless extended shots, which you were begging to end. At about 100 minutes in, audience members were looking at their cell phones, either to check the time or they were getting restless. Second, there were excessive timeline jumps. It's often a useful storytelling device, but here it was excessive and distracting. So much so that when they did another timeline jump, there was a consensus groan. Making matters worse is that there were time jumps as long as 13 years. However, Zendaya, bless her heart, as much as they tried to age her and de-age her through hair and makeup, she never looked, to me, older than about 17 years old, regardless of the time era. Third, while I credit Zendaya for tackling such a meaty role, and as much as I otherwise adore her, she just simply seemed too young to be so weathered and jaded and cynical and ruthless and calculating as she was. Further, I really don't remember smiling once throughout the movie. And as I have read in other reviews, she seemed to have a resting scowl throughout the movie. Ironically, very much similar to the scowl she had throughout both Dune 1 and 2. And lastly, by the end of the movie,
that's just her face.
None of the three characters were likable. And perhaps oddly, sadly, Zendaya was, to me, the least likable. There was about 7 commas in that sentence. You got to cut them down, son. And from a film character study point of view, the viewer is never given a reason or backstory for this. With all these distractions in mind, I was so eager for the movie to end that I lost all investment whatsoever in who won or lost in the story's big moment. 44 out of 61 found that helpful. And that's the challengers.
We've challenged ourselves and come out the other side. Opening in second is Unsung Hero, raking in $7.73 million across 2,800 theaters for Lionsgate Films. That is the movie based on a true story. A mum's faith standing tall against all odds and inspires her husband and children to hold on to hers.
I think we saw the trailer and we still didn't know what was going on.
Yeah. That description didn't help matters, but apparently enough people saw it to get second place over Godzilla Cross Kong, The New Empire, which finds itself in third for the second consecutive week, bringing in $7.22 million, only down 24% week on week. So I guess it's kind of just like the most generally pleasing to audiences movies out there right now.
Yeah.
To late audiences, at least.
It's the Warner pre-summer Bros. Slump.
Yeah. Bring in that $523 million worldwide for Godzilla Cross Kong, New Empire. Civil War drops 3 spots, going from first to fourth this week, down 38.9% to $6.8 million out of 411 theaters. A24's war journalism pick, I guess you'd call it, alternate future, $92 million worldwide, which I gotta think is a pretty modest financial success for them. Yeah. Abigail also drops 2 spots this week in its second week, down all the way to fifth, down 49.5%, $5.2 million this week, total worldwide of $30.2 million. The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare in its second week falls 2 spots, down 56.9%, bringing in $3.8 million in just 2,800 theaters. It's brought in $17 million worldwide, which is... It's better than that. There's better than that. Spoilers for the review section of this episode. Kung Fu Panda 4 bringing in 7th with $3.5 million, down 23%. I think that's up around $504 million worldwide. Frozen Empire, $3.2 million, down an 8th in 6th week. $188 worldwide, so... Pretty rough financial there. And Dune Part 2 in 9th, another $2 million for that on the back end. And it is. It did cross the $700 million worldwide threshold. $705 million. So almost $750 million for Dune Part 2. I think we're getting Dune Part 3. Just a guess.
just a smidge.
And finally, rounding out the top 10 after narrowly beating out the Alien 2024 re-release, Boy Kills World with $1.682 million in 1,900 theaters. I've never heard of Roadside Attractions as a distributor, so...
They do, like, small... They do, like, not indie films, but, like, small films.
Like, see, they did. Oh, they're doing summer camp.
Yeah, they do things here and there. It's weird. Yeah,
they've done. Oh, I guess they've produced the Oscars TV special in 2020, and 2020 Golden Globes.
Yeah,
dear white people. Yeah,
like, it's weird stuff that we've seen before, but. It's nothing. They're not in the business of making blockbusters.
No, they're a distributor for smaller movies.
Yep.
And that's needed.
Yeah. Yeah. We always talk about that in games. We need those don't just need AAA, we need AA and B games out there, you know. But we also need to remember and mourn the fallen movies this week. Leaving the top 10. Monkey Man now in 12th.
Who'd have thought that yeah. movie would fail to retain the attention of audiences?
Yeah. Spy X Family Code White it's still in theaters, but I mean, it's the kind of movie that no one goes back to see. It's just like, oh, okay, I saw it. Now I'm just going to stream it on Crunchyroll. And The First Omen, after 4 weeks, there it goes. Walt Disney, I still baffled why their name is on it. But sadly, because
they made it, Peter. Yeah, they made
it. Was the most sad one is one that never made it, was never given a chance, taken before its time, which is after its time. It's confusing, I know. I mean, I'm talking about The Mummy 2024 re-release, which should have gotten in the top 10.
Yeah.
If Alien can do it, The Mummy can do it.
That's another 25th anniversary one.
It's like 1999 was Hoppin' or some shit.
1999, there is a strong argument that that is the greatest movie year ever. And there's a book written about it, so I'm clearly not the only one who thinks that
way. They knew Y2K was coming. They said, you know what? We got to get all our movies out before the apocalypse.
Seriously, go look up the movies released in 1999, new audience at home, and just like see all the hits. Fight Club, Matrix, Election, The Mummy.
Yeah.
Star Wars Episode One.
Run, Lola, run.
Yeah. I mean, it arguably, like, the return of a Star Wars movie, whether or not, like...
It was a big deal, yes. On it, it was a big deal. On it
and we're like, oh, Jar Jar Binks or whatever. And, like, you gotta say, it's got one of the best songs of, like, all the Star Wars, you know,
it's the only
products.
One I have a commemorative sippy cup of. It's Anakin in his racing pod on top of the cup, and it, like, the straw just randomly sticks through it somewhere. There's no art to it. It's just...
Yeah.
And it's one of those...
I think we also look back on, like, 90s, like, with, like, a really distinct version of nostalgia where it's, like, it's just on the edge of, like, cringeworthy, but it's still, like, heartwarming. It's heartwarming cringe.
Like, yeah.
Now that's what I call pod racing. Or now that's pod racing.
Man on the Moon, being John Malkovich.
Before we move on, I just want to say, y'all remember the big jump, the big bendy straws, like the ones with the chunky bendy ones?
Yeah, like you got Friendlies?
Yeah. Man,
yeah.
They don't have Dems anymore. I'm going to buy some for nostalgia's sake.
Dude, I'm looking at the list of some of these movies, and there are a ton that I forgot, like Three Kings, being John Malkovich, Man on the Moon, that's the Andy Kaufman biopic. American Beauty, Boondock Saints.
Shit.
Yeah, just a ton. Blast from the Past, Big Daddy.
It was a good year.
It was probably the 90s, the of course best. It was a good year.
Wild Wild West, of course. Galaxy Quest.
Oh, jeez.
Austin Powers, Spire Shagged Me.
Yep. I think even if it just had that movie, I think we'd be in.
I mean, we also were born in the perfect era for maybe not to see these in movies, but we saw these.
We grew up with them on home video. Home. Yeah.
Yeah. Either home video or they were, what we used to call streaming, which was cable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or
you used to turn on the television and there would be stuff already on it.
Yeah.
And sometimes it would be movie.
You couldn't choose what you wanted to watch. You were at the mercy of the channel and they had to deliver quality content, i.e. 1999 movies.
Iron fucking Giant, also a 99 release.
Yes, sir. So what we're saying is get a time machine and go back.
Well, what we're saying is you're in for a lot of really good 25th anniversary re-releases this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or wait for cable to come back because we're pretty much almost there.
I mean, functionally, how different are we?
I mean, when you sign up for the Netflix, Prime Video, Hulu, Disney Plus package for only $80 a month with ads,
including live channels.
Yeah, you get your live stuff, you get your live sports, you get your live news for free. That's not even a bonus. You get QVC sometimes. You can buy stuff.
You get random assortment of shows depending on who owns the rights at the time.
You know,
what more could you want?
And for the new content, they'll drop those on a weekly basis. You know, some arbitrary weekly basis, maybe like a Wednesday at 8 p.m. or something like that. When everybody's home and everybody's done with dinner and we sit down before bed and watch a show. Oh, man, that's going to be new and interesting, right?
Yeah. I think you might be onto something, Jake. This seems like it could have some staying power.
God, I'm almost too smart. It hurts. Ugh, I got a headache.
All right, let's move now to gaming news and sad news, I guess. The honeymoon phase where Helldivers 2 can do no wrong is officially over.
Okay, yes, I'm glad we're bringing this up. I mean, that is the big news. I'm curious about your opinion. I have opinions about this. What are your opinions? Well,
the main thing gets me is like the international thing. I think that's the big one at the core. Is this hurts people who can't. For whom this locks the game out.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. I don't really think it's that huge a deal on the face of it. Like, if everyone could get a PSN account and that was it, that was the only requirement, I wouldn't have an issue with it.
I don't think they're... The internet would necessarily have an issue with it. It'd be a much smaller controversy.
Well, there are people that like harp on that because, like, I mean, yes, the PSN has had a poor history of data breaches in the past. There was a famous one where the PSN was hacked, and like for an entire summer, I want to say in like 2011 or 2012,
yeah,
the PSN was just not functional. And they gave you 2 free games when it came back on as an attempt at a make good. And then I think more recently there was another data breach. So I can understand people being a little hesitant to give Sony their data. But for me, the biggest problem is that there are people who are playing the game that will get region locked out of it at having already purchased it and played it for months. And that does not sit right with me.
I agree with that. Yeah. I don't know what the fix is for that. I don't know how many people that affects.
I think that falls under, like, especially for places in Europe, like EU regulations or, like, international trade regulations.
Like, I know this is just a meme, but it said it was a Helldivers 2 patch 1.0.3 or 2 patch. Now it's removes Chinese, removes Russian, removes Eastern European people, African people, Filipino people. So I'm sure that is somewhat accurate. I don't know how accurate it is, but I mean, are they gonna really go out there and tell people to be like, go download a VPN or something like that? Or I think there should be a workaround for it.
I mean, there's a way. Like, there will be people will figure out a way to either bypass the requirement entirely or
what I mean is that there should be a workaround given by PlayStation or by Arrowhead where they can do something alternate that they're affiliated with or something like that.
Like Steam.
Yeah, I was going to say, if Arrowhead had their druthers, this wouldn't be a thing, and they don't like it. They're trying to get Sony to like fucking get off of this shit. And if PlayStation had their druthers, they don't care because as Sony's far as they're concerned, until they start making PSNs in those markets, those customers just don't exist to them anyways.
Yeah. Now, I did hear from somebody that this was something that was known from the beginning, that due to like technical reasons, they just couldn't, you know, put the requirement of having the PSN account like from the get-go. So this shouldn't be something new if you read the original terms and conditions.
Yeah, they shoved it in the EULA.
I had heard someone actually went through and read through the EULA and did not find a mention of that in there.
Yeah. Either way, it's not wrong, enforceable.
Yeah. No.
I mean, the joke is that EULA stands for Exceedingly Unenforceable Legal Agreement.
Just please, here, we'll use this and pretend that you can't sue us.
But yeah, they claim that this was known from the beginning, which probably by them it was. But one of them also claimed that they needed to do it because there isn't a way just through Steam to uniquely identify players for like bans and stuff, which is horseshit because there's three separate unique user IDs on Steam that could be used to identify accounts and ban them. So they're in full-on damage control, and they really need to get everyone in a room and decide who's going to speak for the company, because people are saying shit and it's putting foot in some mouths.
And on top of that, Arrowhead is kind of also not, they don't know the full picture because they're at the mercy of PlayStation to give them direction, and they're still waiting to hear back from certain affiliates over at PlayStation. So at a certain point, they're like, we don't know anything else. It's out of our hands. Like this is stipulation that we had to agree to when we made this game. And on one hand, I don't think it'll be a big issue because I think most of the player base is not going to be affected by it. They're not going to have a problem.
Yeah. Like I've already done it. I've already made a PlayStation account and linked to do crossplay. Like I've already made the step, so I can't like sit here and say, oh, this is a egregious affront to my stuff when I've already fucking done it. It for most people, it's not a big deal. The people I really feel bad for are the people who could potentially be region locked out of this. I don't know how big a player base that is, but it doesn't matter to them how big a player base they are. They bought the game with their hard-earned money in a region where perhaps that's a more significant chunk of what they make.
I would like to see that if people are not able to make a PlayStation account, they should get refunded. So the people in the areas who just can't continue playing the game.
I would hope right Steam would be able to make that happen.
There's a TikToker, YouTuber, pirate something that when I first heard about it, I heard it from him. And he was beyond livid, and I think he was making a bigger deal out of it than I think it should have been. Like he was saying, "I've changed my review, I've uninstalled it, I've requested Steam for a refund, which they're not gonna get. You've played it for way too long, and it's
no shot,
no shot. You're gonna get a refund." So I was like, "Oh shit! Like that's a really harsh response to like." Them just saying make an account and link it, and it's not even technically affecting him. I don't think he lives in a region. His only qualms were he didn't want to give Sony his information, which is a reason. But
you don't need to give him a ton of information to make your account.
You can falsify stuff. You can make fake information.
Yeah, as long as you give him a valid email address to verify that. You have access to that email address. You could fill whatever the fuck you want in there.
So, like, at a certain point, and if he's concerned about, like, IP address information stuff, I'm like, well, if you're concerned about that already, you should already have a VPN. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're
concerned
about.
At that point.
Like, I'm sorry, but in this day and age, the amount of, like, ways that you can have your location or information leaked, I don't know if you can cover all your bases fast enough in order to protect yourself. It's just the cat's out of the bag too much. There's too many ways of like leaking information. So I don't know. I think the majority, maybe not the majority, but a significant portion of the community is making a bigger deal out of this, and it's causing the game to go down to mixed reviews. Like the most recent, like 40% of reviews have been mostly negative, and it's at mixed. And I get the bad feels from it because Arrowhead, just like a week ago, we were all cosplaying as fucking Helldivers, talking about spreading managed democracy, and now we're just like, oh, game's dead. It's like, god damn. It's like, how fickle of a community can we be?
It's, you know, I think it's just kind of the nature of the internet. And I think it's kind of just a selection bias thing. You know, people who are upset about this are the people who are going to go and leave a review to tell you how upset they are about it. Mm-hmm. And the percentage of users that actually review games on Steam, like I've reviewed like maybe two games on Steam and I've had a Steam account for over 15 years. It's not a high percentage of people that do that. So the voices get magnified. Like, you know, you go on X or Twitter or whatever and you see just the perverse brain rot on that app, and then you go outside and you're like, okay, yeah, not everyone's that fucking crazy. So I think it just kind of gets signal boosted. And yeah, it does suck to have your game reviewed negatively for something that doesn't have anything to do with the game. That's very common on Steam, and I almost never like it. Like, when people trash the game in user reviews because it has Denuvo or something in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I understand. I don't want to install something with Denuvo on my computer if I can avoid it. Thanks for the heads up, but that doesn't tell me anything about the game. Except that it uses this really shitty anti-cheat.
Yeah.
Or DRM.
I kind of wish there was, like, a joinder sort of, like, game reviews, or, you know, they switched up, because that happens with a lot of games. It's like the gameplay good, the game content good, the functionality of the software and the operation of it, or the context of that the game is coming out in, is what's causing the you to make your decision about the purchase.
Yeah, driving the reviews.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing that kind of happens. And what's weird to me is that this game also uses anti-cheat, uses GameGuard anti-cheat, which is pretty fucking bad anti-cheat. And no one seemed to give a shit about that. Which is usually something people make a huff about too.
I mean, when my friends and I started talking about downloading it, one of them was like almost a hell no, because of GameGuard. He was like, oh no, they use GameGuard, that like it goes into your files. It's like way too invasive. And then I think he said he found a workaround for it that made him more comfortable downloading it. I don't know if he still actively does the prevention measures, because I think it was like every time he opened it he had to do something or something, but or I think it might have just been like you had to delete a file or something like that. Yeah, but there definitely was some people, but I heard less of that than I am hearing about this, because everybody's talking about this.
It is what it is.
As we talk about it, this is sort of a live item. You know, the story is updating as we discuss
it. It's definitely a developing story.
Yeah. So we will probably have updates by next week.
Yeah, yep. We'll see. We'll see what Sony comes out with or Arrowhead comes out with. Yeah.
In happier news, Maximilian Dude, who's a popular fighting game streamer, has commissioned a complete graphics overhaul mod for Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite, which just looks ugly. I'll say that. It's not, well, not the overhaul, but like MVCI initially at launch just looked really friggin' bad. and the gameplay was pretty good. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people were put off by just how much of a visual downgrade it was from Ultimate Marvel 3. And, you know, there are some gameplay downgrades, like Gone is the huge roster and the 3v3 tag team action. It's back to 2v2 with, you know, like the like Marvel superheroes gem type system. Mm-hmm. But like I said, the gameplay was actually pretty well received by most people who played it. But the game died a horrible death because it was
announced looking at it now.
Right after. So like the overhaul art style, I should probably talk more about that since that's the story, not the history of MVCI. It adds in a bunch more like shell shading to both character models and backgrounds to make it look a little more like Marvel 3. Not quite like the same style of Marvel 3. I actually think it looks a little bit better than Marvel 3, honestly, because that's an art style that something it took me time to grow to love. But this looks a lot more striking, certainly than the base game, and you know, maybe even more than Marvel 3. So I hope this gets off the ground. It might give me an excuse to check out MVCI since I skipped it, because like I said, came out the worst possible time, because when it was in development, everyone was like, I don't know about this game. At EVO that year, they announced Dragon Ball FighterZ.
Whoa, oopsie. Yep. Bit of a stumble there, but yeah, hopefully it could, hopefully this gets good.
So that'd be interesting.
I was trying to find an article on it, but I wonder if PC Gamer just didn't write an article about it, which is good. Did you hear about the controversy around Stellar Blade?
Oh, with the ass crack?
With the costume change, and I don't know if they did adjust like jiggle physics, but like it caused like an uproar in the Stellar Blade community. I don't know if there's a community for it or.
Well, I mean, it's popular. When Peter and I were at Best Buy, that was like sold out. There were no copies of Stellar Blade left.
This dropped huge.
So Stellar Blade came out. It's like, what is it, like an Elden Rings or not, like a Doom?
It's a Dark Souls, I think it's like a JRPG game or something like that.
Okay, yeah. So it's it's an RPG game that driving seller is in part the body and art style of the characters in the game. There's some very gratuitous designs in the game, and the jiggle physics is, even as they are now, what I've seen, pretty.
Yeah. This is like a character action game kind of thing. Yeah.
So, with this, there was a lot of, costumes that came out, and skins that you could get for your character. And a lot of them were pretty, eyebrow raising. And I think between the trailer and the release, they had edited one of the costumes to make it less revealing. They added lace over the chest and crotch region.
Yes.
I don't know if this was intentional to make it more revealing or if this was just an art direction they wanted to take, if they thought maybe the original design was too bland. Maybe a little bit of both. I mean, it definitely doesn't seem like they were like, oh,
they still kept the Chun-Li pants.
Yeah, it's not exactly, the costume changes don't exactly make it modest.
That's what I mean. I'm like, I'm seeing these changes, and I'm like, wait, where's the restraint on modesty? Because like, there's tons of other skins that are like even more revealing than the original design was. What are you talking about that this is a censorship? They were calling it this massive censorship of the game, and gooners were upset that their goon game was gonna was gonna take away from their enjoyment. And if one skin out of the several dozens takes away this much enjoyment, then check yourself. Take a long look in the mirror. I wouldn't say check yourself.
You probably already wrecked yourself.
Yeah. So that was pretty funny to see. You could smell them through the camera. Because there was like a petition change.org thing that a bunch of people.
Those are always the best because it's always the most unhinged shit.
Yeah. What was the best was they posted videos about it too. They were like, Stellar Blade, if you could stop censoring our hentai, that'd be great.
I can't draw cleavage myself, so I need the assistance of a professional company to do it.
The thing about it is like it's so easy to get what you're looking for there on the internet, which I know you use because you're tweeting about it. So fucking just go into that search bar that you use to get the Twitter and type in fucking big anime titties and boom.
Got them.
Your world will be rocked by how easily accessible they are.
Have you heard of rule34.com?
Yeah.
My God. Yeah, it was quite a funny turn of events. It was, yeah. Since I think the game's been fully released, I think less people have been mad about it because they realize it's not.
I'm looking through all this shit. I haven't seen a fucking, if I just typed in Stellar Blade into Google, I haven't seen one fucking actual, like, gameplay screenshot yet.
I've just
seen, all just like character portraits and, like, reaction images, like, thumbnails for videos.
There might be a reason behind that.
Yeah. So, I guess, while it is popular, I can't speak to the gameplay. I have no clue.
I don't know nothing about it.
Yeah, just all cutscenes and.
I think it's like a Bayonetta style, hack and slash.
Yeah. Stellar Blade gameplay. Nope.
No, who wants that? Nobody's playing the game for the gameplay.
Just looking at the skins.
It's like my kingdom for a HUD.
It's like. Yeah.
You don't need one. It's minimalist game design.
Like this skin I saw, I was like, okay, this game is unserious about like censorship. This is, I think the name for the skin was like skin suit skin.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Like you're just not. God damn it. Yeah. Okay. Anyways, I don't want to talk about it too much. Yeah. It's it's a porn game. It's a horny ass game. And we're going to move on.
It's a waifu collector. Yeah. Very finally, very quickly. Totally getting away from that. No, Viz Media is now officially publishing the Magic the Gathering manga in English. Destroy all humans, they can't be regenerated. It's like a rom-com anime about magic in the 90s. And they're going to be releasing exclusive cards with it. I'm assuming it's old school cards from Urza's block and that era. So one will be included with each volume.
Power 9.
Yes.
You're going to see fucking Time Twister.
The fucking catch is it's the goddamn 30th anniversary. Yeah. They had some extra chaff that they offloaded.
They're silver bordered.
Yeah.
Alrighty, let's move on now and talk about The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, the new movie from Guy Ritchie. This movie is like if Casablanca and Inglourious Basterds had a baby, and that baby was directed by Guy Ritchie, you have this movie.
It's a good 2 hours of killing Nazis.
With
some stiff upper lip, proper British gentleman lad, the lads.
And like it's Casablanca-esque in that it's in Africa during World War II in a neutral territory. And there are Nazis around, but they're not the ones in power. It's settled around like an establishment, like, you know, in Casablanca, it was his casino. And then this was also kind of a casino sort of thing.
The setting of Casablanca with the action of Inglourious Basterds.
Except more action than Inglourious Basterds.
Okay. Yeah, there are some, they, as Guy Ritchie is wont to do, just put more action in there.
Yeah, and
everyone gets,
you know,
a fight scene.
He's got the you know, the way he writes his protagonists, they're all very smooth operators, which I enjoy. And I have to give a shout out to Alan Richson. I apologize, I was not familiar with your game.
Yeah.
Like I had known about how Reacher got like blew up and whatnot. And I guess I'm now making the connection that he was in
Blue Mountain State,
yeah.
Yeah.
Which tracks. So I guess I was a little more familiar with his game. I just didn't realize he had grown up.
And became a fucking monster.
But yeah, well, he's a mountain of a man, and that's kind of like what I thought. I thought he was like one of those big, dumb, meathead himbo actors.
Yeah.
But I saw on Reddit like a post of his on some, I think it was Instagram. It was like a very nuanced take on like this controversy surrounding you know, police overreach in an area. And it was like really eloquent and well put. I was like, oh damn. And I had seen this like GQ, I think, or no, it was Men's Health. They have this series where they like go to people with impressive physiques and like tour their kitchen and talk about like their diet and how they train. And he came off really well in that. And I was like, okay, so maybe this is good. And then I saw him in this movie. I'm like, all right, I think I have to watch Reacher now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, cause he's
I'm a fan of his now. Yeah. Like
dude's got range.
He displayed chops that I did not know he had. Yeah.
Got like, a little bit of that accent control. That was pretty solid.
His accent was pretty, I think, pretty good. I don't talk with
enough
people from Sweden enough. Yeah.
I believe that. Maybe some Swedes are out there that are like,
no.
Oh, Fingen.
His accent is totally bad. I'm going to go eat my Fingenfargen.
But yeah, I mean, this was, it's hard not to like a movie that is just like centered around killing Nazis. And also doubly what's better is that it was a little bit, I think was it loosely based on a true story or was
it's based on a declassified military operation.
Yeah.
So like, I can't speak to the details, but the broad strokes of the plot actually happened.
Yeah, I'm sure the dramatization of like how, like the whether or not the British were going to like arrest them or something like that, or how there was a bit of a time jump. They jumped from like 15 days away to like 2 days away, so it was kind of unclear. You know, that's the only like criticism I have there.
Well, they
but,
were sailing, and I think only sailing. So, do you really want to watch 13 days worth of sailing scenes? Yeah.
They're good characters, but. We can get enough, as Guy Ritchie shows, you can develop them enough through the action that they're...
I mean, but they kept talking up about how dangerous it was to sail that close near the S-boats, and they were like, oh, it, you know, if we go this way, we're going to totally be spotted by the British, or by the Germans, and like it's not going to be fun. But then they just didn't...
Wait, no, they did get stopped by a British vessel when they were sailing close.
It was one. Well, it was the English when they
and then there was like
saying.
A U-boat
and then a
U-boat
attack
that they escaped from.
Yeah, they ran away.
Yeah.
So I think they
just summarized it up to that.
I think that was better than having them have to contend with the U-boat because there's no shot that would have
that
wouldn't have been believable at all. It's interesting because I'm sure that this movie is, I'm going to guess, 50% accurate, but that's higher than normal because, as with any story where Ian Fleming is is involved, more of it is probably true than we know,
or than would initially be believable.
Yeah, All right, which actor am I thinking of? Just pick it. No,
Henry Cavill.
Yeah, let me find who I'm thinking of. Christopher Lee. Sadly, if I know if Christopher Lee was still alive, he would have had a cameo in this because he was like one of the guys who worked in British intelligence.
Yeah, he was SAS.
Yeah. So I'm sure he would have loved to have like a cameo playing his old department. That would have been fun because I think he and Ian Fleming like knew each other too.
Oh, I'm sure they did. I guess I didn't realize that Ian Fleming had actually worked in British intelligence.
Yeah, that was that was like the inspiration for 007. Was like
it tracks.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm saying is like with an Ian Fleming story, like a lot more than you probably think is true to life.
Yeah.
If you know, talking about British intelligence. So even though I should make it clear, he did not write this story. This is not a 007 story. This is just an adaptation of a non-fictional declassified brief of a particular secret service, secret special ops operation.
Correct.
Yeah. So probably what happened, if you want to be that way about it, was they were probably more successful in that they did not have to engage as many enemies.
Yes.
And probably did encounter like one or two times, like, when there was issues with the power when they were trying to cut it to the island, like, or discovering that the twist, I won't spoil it. That probably did happen. They had to work around it, but it wasn't, they had to judge it up for the movie, which is fine.
Yeah, the Wikipedia article calls it a heavily fictionalized version of Operation Postmaster.
Oh.
I don't doubt it.
I'm sure Lars or whoever probably brought a bow and maybe shot one guy.
Yeah, I feel like Alan Ritchson just took up archery recently. And he's like, can you write my character to use a bow and arrow? And guy's like, yeah, sure.
I'm gonna be Popeye Legolas out here carving out Nazis' hearts.
You know what looks awesome on my yoked out arm? A string guard.
Yeah. And what's funny is they do have the what did they do after? And Lars was on They're 15 more operations and became a captain or a really high ranking officer and through the end of the war. So he was in on that. He was in for that shit. He was for the smoke.
Anders. Wow, that's quite the name. Anders Frederick Emil Victor Shah Lassen. VCMC in two bars. Was a highly decorated Danish soldier. Was the only non-Commonwealth recipient of the British Victoria Cross in the Second World War. He was posthumously awarded the United Kingdom's highest gallantry award for his actions during Operation Roast. So not even the operation this movie's based on April 8th, 1945 at Lake Camaccio in Italy, in the final weeks of the Italian campaign. Passed away he died in 1945. Yeah. At age 24. He's only 20s? Yeah. He's only in his 20s of this movie?
Yeah, dude was a fucking beast. That's why I'm more of this is probably true than you think. Because, they were all special operatives, so it does make sense that they'd just be able to do this shit. But anyways, the movie itself, it's fine. It's a straightforward plot with a little, couple little twists.
I would say it's
here.
Better than fine. I think this is probably Guy Ritchie's best movie since at least The Gentleman. Back a little further than that. I think this is probably the thing I've seen of his that I've liked Henry Cavill the most in.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, he kind of
He let his hair down a little bit and had some more fun with this and displayed some personality that I didn't think he had, to be frank.
Yeah, that's fair. I now that you kind of mention it, you know, the roles he's taken up to this point have been pretty stiff. Now, admittedly, I haven't seen The Man from U.N.C.L.E., so I can't.
I mean, that's a more serious spy thriller, so I'm sure he's similarly, like, straight with it.
Yeah, and this one, he gets to play the keep calm and carry on, stiff upper lip type lad.
And fucking kleptomaniac. I just love that he keeps taking shit. That scene where he's introduced and he's just like taking cigars.
Very good.
It's so good. Yeah, it's perfect. It's great.
Like, I need to get me one of those jackets.
Yeah.
And then it actually helps out in the later run. I was like, I was glad that it actually was.
It paid it off.
Something.
Yeah, there's it's a lot of great show don't tell. There's a lot of that in this, where you see them setting up things before you necessarily figure out what they are. I mean, you can kind of tell, like it's pretty obvious because the action is conveyed in a very clear manner, also, which is not so common of a skill set for a filmmaker.
I know it's almost a lost art, and I feel like modern audiences and like critics especially have kind of lost the sense that that is how it's supposed to be done, because they'll often complain about, I found the movie a little difficult to follow because it didn't tell me exactly what was happening at every moment. It's like, but the action is presented to you clear in front of the camera, and because they don't spend 25 minutes explaining everything, the movie can be shorter because pictures, turns out, worth 1,000 words.
Yeah.
And you have 24 pictures every second in a movie, so you can be pretty judicious with your words.
Convey a lot of stuff. This is definitely a case of less is more. Like, in the case of, I guess, the problem of the movie, right? There is an antagonist, but he is not, like... It's almost like the Fifth Element kind of thing where, like, I don't think he ever sees the guys. Like, the crew and him don't, like, really ever interact. Like, he's on the dock at the end, like, shooting at them. But.
Yeah, I think he's by the time he would have encountered one of the main crew, I think he had already been, relieved of living.
Yeah. That's the other part, which is great because they get to play the fearless action heroes and get their kind of scenes where they just have swashbuckling adventures. Meanwhile, at the same time, you have this kind of spy thriller action where who are the actors who are on the island?
It was Marjorie or Isla Gonzalez and I forget his actor's name.
Babs.
Mr. Heron.
Olusanmokun. Yeah, as Heron.
Olusanmokun.
Yeah.
He was good.
Yeah. Oh, he's always great. He always grabs a great role. He's, that very professional. Like you know, he's not fearless. Like he gets, he's got to watch out for his neck.
He does a good job of, I felt, invoking a lot of the same mannerisms I think of with like Audrey Hepburn.
Who are you thinking of?
The guy in Casablanca. Why can't I think of his name?
Oh, I don't know. My brain.
Humphrey Bogart.
Oh, yeah, Humphrey Bogart, of course.
Jesus, one of the most famous actors ever, and I couldn't remember his fucking name. he had a lot of the same character mannerisms as that, which I felt was appropriate because their characters are kind of similar in functions in their stories. And you can argue that the movie is more so centered around that half of the operation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
That's where I get a little bit of the Inglourious Basterds thing from it, because the Inglourious Basterds are barely in that movie. Yeah. It's all focused on the other fucking story.
I thought they were gonna take Marjorie's her operation a little bit farther than they were. They made mm-hmm. it sound like she wanted more of a revenge kill than a like than just like a assassination kind of thing.
Well, her like motives that was her motive against the Nazis, like why she was willing to take on such a dangerous mission with very little upside for her is because she had that personal motivation.
The way they were just playing it up is like they were playing it up like, oh, Heinrich is just the savage, tortures people.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he's this weird, I thought like, they were
a minority torture dungeon that he keeps like on the island.
It seemed like they were going to play it as like, oh, they were going to reverse the roles at the end and she was going to be the one torturing him or something like that. But in the end, it just turned out to be just a headshot.
Well,
which is fine.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
I do appreciate, though, that his downfall was, like, his perverted lust for her, that she, like, catfished him into dropping his guard before she found that what she was hiding under her dress was murder.
Well, I don't know that he figured out her scheme.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
He figured out that she was Jewish.
Well, yeah. So he went to go deal with that. I think, I don't know that he necessarily fell for anything. She just happened to be more prepared, which is like the trait of all the encounters. Like, that there's one thing criticism you can levy against a lot of, especially more modern Guy Ritchie movies, is that the antagonists don't really pose a ton of threat to the protagonists. Like when Heron's planting the bomb and the other guys get the drop on him, you're like, oh shit, he's in trouble. But no, joke's on you. He came prepared.
He's got the sleeve gun. Bah, bah.
He's got the sleeve gun and he had the knife and he's good, which is good because you don't want him to die. But at the same time, like you don't really fear for their safety too much.
Well, and all these guys are set out on a suicide mission. So there's some understanding.
It feels like someone should die, but again, this is based on a true story, so they all made it out in real life, so.
Yeah, that's why we never heard of them, is they all died, and like, oh, it's a shame they sacrificed themselves for, like, the greater good.
This isn't, turns out Rogue One, this is not.
Yeah.
So,
I was a little surprised that, like, pretty much everybody got out unscathed, except for the two. Except for, well, I guess it was only one. Was it one or two? I think it was two of
the pirates,
Billy's pirates that got murdered.
And one of the guys got winged in the shoulder.
Yeah, he got shot.
He got winged in the shoulder. Yeah,
he was pretty seriously injured, but
yeah,
I like the Billy's character. Is that what his name was? Billy?
Yes. He was
Danny Sapani.
Yeah.
Is that what his Kambili Kalu? KB.
Yes. Kambili. Yes.
KB was great.
That's why they call him Billy. Yeah.
And I do. That was a great one. That just it's a little moment that rang so true for me in my line of work, in my life, is that like these two guys, the point of sticking for them was like that they were meeting each other doing these negotiations. And they're like, wait a second, we went to the same private school.
Wait, I feel like
immediately
I know you.
Just like
you
glue.
Know cricket.
You're in the fucking trophy case. And I know there's so many times in my actual like professional life where I'm like, oh, we have the same like very personal like part of our we go to like the same school or whatever. Small world.
Yeah.
I thought they were gonna make it be like, oh, he was at a rival private school and they played against each other, or he's seen his picture at the rival school and they always lost to him or something like that. And they were going to have some, and they weren't going to like each other, but then they were like, oh no,
nah, they're just
like,
old boys. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's nice and heartwarming in this Nazi movie full of action killing.
It's a great part of a message too, is that like, this is another reason why like Britain won, because they fostered like, communication and all the culture, and they brought people together. I don't know. That's a little far reaching, to be fair. But like, you notice that like, in a lot of the cast for the British people, right? There's a lot of black people and a lot of diversity in on their side, and then of course, obviously, it's just the Nazis on the other side.
Including the Mexican lady playing the Jewish one.
Yeah, that one's a little bit. That, man, speaking of stretches,
the DEI is going hard in British. That's what they really won. DEI won the World War II.
Yeah. Shockingly, this is not scoring super high on Metacritic.
Who knows? Yeah.
It's weird. I saw the box office. I was like, damn, this is surprisingly underperforming what I thought it would.
Yeah.
Because it's a funny movie. It was entertaining.
It's a fun movie. A lot of the negative reviews seem to be there's not a lot of tension in there. It's like not every movie needs to have that.
Yeah. It doesn't need to be like the excitement of the movie is seeing these guys who the tension is the odds that the movie was set up with, like the premise of you have 2 weeks to get there and complete this mission. It's just you have no support. And the payoff comes from watching how they do that.
Yeah. I think there was tension. It just was never consequential, because there are many moments where the tension kind of peaks.
Yeah.
When he gets found at the electrical plant, when Heinrich realizes she's Jewish.
The politics, the whole song. The act on the home front where their operation almost gets found out by the mole.
Politics of the home front. They get stopped by the British boat, and they're in the middle of like a U-boat attack.
Yeah, they succeed in the end, and I guess that's kind of like related to the criticism I had, where they don't ever really fail, so you don't feel they're in danger. But you know, after with all the nihilism and like shit in movies today, where you have to have a tragic villain, it's nice to just have a movie where the good guys beat the bad guys because the good guys are better.
Yeah, I mean, like we saw. Like 1918, All Quiet on the Western Front. I mean, granted, those are about World War One, but you also saw like Saving Private Ryan, which is also about an audacious operation. To go do something, and those are like very hard hitting, like thoughtful, thought provoking, tough movies to watch. Which like you come out feeling like you did like some work there. Yeah. Watching them, and this one is just like, oh shit, yeah, all right, these guys just dispatching them. Cool.
There's room for a movie to come out and just be a fun movie, and I don't think it makes the movie any worsely made. Like, this is a very well made movie. It uses solid principles of filmmaking. The action scenes are good. The way the cinematography is, I mean, not like remarkably good, but there are wonderful mix of establishing shots and fairly basic but reliably sound camera moves and things of that nature. The script is great, the acting is great. I don't really know how you can front the execution of the movie too much of it, and if you feel that it just lacks sadness, I guess. Yeah. Then I don't know.
I don't know what to tell you. They
says more about you than the movie, I think.
It's like watching a Godzilla movie, but it's World War II.
Yeah, it is in some ways similar to Godzilla cross Kong, in that there doesn't feel like there's a ton of stakes when you're watching the movie. But it's fun and you enjoy your time at the movies, which it's entertainment. Yeah. Ultimately, that's the goal, is for you to be entertained. Not every movie has to challenge you. And if a movie doesn't challenge you, doesn't mean it's not like a well-made movie.
Well, and some movies get their entertainment from like a good twist. Some movies get their entertainment from like exceptional acting and like a riveting story or something like that. And some movies get their entertainment from just like really good action pieces. And those shouldn't be lessened or disqualified from being a quote-unquote good movie because of they're reliant on explosions and action scenes and muscle men. But it should be broken apart, because you could do that badly, and I don't think this movie did any of those things badly.
No, this movie,
I think this movie had excellent action
executed
set pieces.
Greatly. The action set pieces were good. The acting and character dialogues were good. The characters played off each other in believable ways. I mean, you can be like, oh, why is everyone so chummy? Well, you know, that's kind of like how the culture is in Britain.
Yeah, and that's
well,
he also knew everyone
yeah. too. You know,
these were associates of his. He picked his team of his guys, and they're his guys for a reason.
Did you miss the first like 5 minutes of the movie? Like he called these guys out specifically and knew their backstory. You know, some people call that exposition. Some people just
you know, my biggest gripe is Tom. They didn't do a assembling the team montage.
No, he's just like, I need these
Where
guys.
Was everybody?
And then the next, well, actually, they flashback because the first scene is just them on the boat.
Yeah.
Where you don't know anything what's going on. And then, you know, the Nazis be Nazi things and like, all right, jigs up. And then they just kill them and they blow up the other boat. And they're like, all right, you want to tell us what we're doing out here? And then they go back and they establish. So
tell
they
us
show
what we're
you,
doing out there.
They show you who the characters are and their capabilities. And then they tell you about their backstories, like, and they don't, and it just works. And I don't know why people would criticize a movie for approaching things like that, especially when, you know, a movie like John Wick gets very universal critical praise for, honestly, is a very similarly structured movie, just more focused on the action and less with the characters and the caper aspect of it. I don't know. Yeah. There's a reason why we don't really put much stock in professional reviewers because there's a type
of
movie that
they're
like.
Stuck in a lot of the conventions of, or their, not even conventions of what a movie should be, but their own ideas of what a movie should be. Because I would say, you know, even though this is very well executed, it's not like it's a wildly experimental type of film.
No, it's very, very...
Like, I could put... This is like a movie from, like, the 90s.
Yes, this is a movie that, like, if you hear Guy Ritchie is directing a World War II spy movie, this is what I expect.
Yes, I can't wait to watch this in 6 months on Spike TV.
Yeah,
or TNT,
or
rather. Probably.
Or either one. Just like, wherever at home. I definitely say if you are a fan of any of Guy Ritchie's previous movies, you definitely owe it to yourself to go and see this. I think this is a good one. If you haven't watched one of his movies before, I think this is a good one to start with. It's very, very approachable. It's just a fun movie. Yeah, like you should watch anything with Cary Elwes in it. That's just a rule of the world.
He's got good taste in his roles.
He does. And I'm happy to see that one of my favorite actors and one of my favorite directors have linked up a lot in recent years.
Yeah.
It's definitely a good watch for me. I would say it's probably worth seeing in the theater, just because. I think seeing it with an audience was enhanced. Well, like we had a surprisingly full house considering when we went to see it,
and it was a
good crowd.
Warm house. It was. Yeah. I mean, people were really engaging with the movie in a good way.
Yeah. When I got my ticket, I was the third ticket bought in the theater, and I bought it maybe an hour before showtime, which always surprises me when I go to buy a ticket and there's nobody in the theater, and then I show up and there's like it's almost a full house. We had a small theater, and I'm like, there must have been another 10 to 15 people added on to that. I'm like, damn, you all just walk up at the mall at 10:40 and just get
the trailers are 20 minutes long,
30 in some cases. I usually show up to the movie like 10 minutes after the scheduled start time, and that gives me
like
time to buy my tickets, get concessions, and by the time I'm in my seat, the movie's starting.
Yeah, the small theater by me, they just had a sign that like, hey, the movie starts like 20 minutes later than the showtime. Like they notified us of this, like, so just don't be, you know, be advised or whatever. So that's the other takeaway, just like, just go at the showtime. You can show up to the theater at the showtime now, and for the next, I don't know, until the backlash comes back, you'll be fine.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, unless anyone has anything else they want to enter to the ring here, it gets a thumbs up from us at the Saturn Studs house. Definitely recommend watching it in the theater, and probably even worth buying on Blu-ray if that's your jam. Until next time, be well, stay safe, and party like it's 1995.
Peace.
Bye-bye.